In the 13th, 14th, and 15th centuries, while Chaucer, Boccaccio, and Dante were creating works that would later come to be considered among the cornerstones of modern literature, a handful of Scandinavian writers, many of them unknown to us today, were creating what are known as, have come to be known as, the Icelandic sagas. Novelistic in form, the sagas were accounts of family histories that depicted the adventures and blood feuds of the Vikings. And Pulitzer Prize-winning novelist Jane Smiley wrote the introduction to the Penguin collection of the sagas of Icelanders. She joins us now to talk about Eagle Saga and other works of Viking literature as part of our underappreciated series. Welcome back to our show.
Thanks. Fun to be here.
You've written your own novel in the spirit of the sagas, The Greenlanders. How did you become interested in them in the first place?
I took Old Norse when I was early in graduate school. I had taken Anglo-Saxon in college, and so then when I got into graduate school, there was a man there who was teaching Old Norse, and I signed up for his class.
Were you the only person in the class?
Oh, no. There were probably 12 people in the first year and 8 in the second year.
And you say in your introduction to the Penguin collection that these sagas stood out for you more than other medieval literature, more than Beowulf or the Canterbury Tales or the Decameron?
Well, they were easier to understand. Oddly enough, even though I was reading them in Icelandic, sort of word by word, so there was a paradoxical thing going on. Part of the paradox was that I had to focus on every word, and so they sort of seeped into my consciousness. But the other part of the paradox was that the things that they depict are very straightforward and gripping. Things like feuds, things like curses, things like adventures of all kinds, and things like the attempt of those who get into feuds and fights to work them out through some kind of application of the law. And so Iceland was small. It was inhabited by, a modest number of people. And every year they went to what was called the Althing, which was the law, a place where they worked out, disputes. And they all went. So it was a very uniform society. And the sagas are oddly uniform and oddly strange. So I don't know. They were just very alluring for me.
Were there any problems with the system of the Althings? You mentioned a lack of executive branch of government in your introduction.
Well, one of the problems or one of the sources of the way that they governed themselves was that they had, and this is in Egil Saga, they had left Norway as a result of the efforts by Harald Fairhair to become king of Norway in a typical sort of European way. He wanted to be the boss. And so a lot of nobles and wealthy people from Norway set out to find a place where they could not have a king. And so they existed outside of the typical European system of king, church, nobility, and peasantry. And so in some ways they were a middle class or, let's say, a non-hierarchical society. And it didn't work. It worked for a while. It didn't work out sort of like The Godfather or something like that. Since they had no executive authority and they were sort of making up the laws and trying to put them into effect as they went along, eventually the system broke down. And they did go back and ask the king of Norway in, I think, the 15th century if he would establish authority in Iceland. But for those few hundred years, they really worked hard at trying to work it out themselves and to not have a king and to be a kind of group of powerful nobles.
Mm-hmm. It sounds almost like a form of anarchy more than democracy. But
well, it was always on that line.
Yeah.
There was anarchy to one side of the line and democracy to the other side of the line. And the sagas are really about trying to negotiate their path along that line.
And you mentioned they were written in Icelandic. Is that a version of Danish or Norwegian?
Well, Icelandic and Danish and Norwegian at the time were, let's say, they were dialects of the same language. But then as the various countries split apart, they have since become separate languages. But at the time, they were understandable. Old Norse was understandable to Norwegians, Icelanders, Swedes, Danes, many people in Ireland and England. One of the things that's interesting about Eyjafjallajökull is that it's very geographical. It takes place, Iceland is the place where they go for a rest after they've been fighting and battling all over Norway, England, and Ireland. And so it gives you a really interesting perspective of the Viking period of, say, the middle of the 9th century to the end of the 10th century.
Do we know who wrote Eyjafjallajökull?
Well, we suspect that we know. We suspect that it was written by Snorri Sturluson, who was a very erudite Icelander of the 13th century. And he put together another set of literature called the Edda. And he was a member of an extremely powerful family in his day. And in fact, his day was the day that was the time period when the system, the political system, was breaking down. And one of the things that happened as a result of the breakdown was that he was assassinated by some of his enemies. So he was clearly thinking about politics and sociology and character and what it means to be a hero and what it means to go too far and what it means to throw off authority. And so he writes about Egil with a kind of admiring ambivalence. I've read it three or four times, and when I went through it this time, I was struck by how brutal Egil is, mm-hmm. And yet he does get his way. You know, he does have a great deal of integrity, and I think that psychological paradox was maybe something that the author was interested in.
I'm talking to Jane Smiley, who wrote the introduction to the Penguin collection of the Sagas of Icelanders. We are talking about one of those sagas, Egil's Saga, written, we think, by Snorri Sturluson. And when I say written by him, would he have written this the way a modern novelist would have written a story, or would this have been based on the oral tradition and the way that Homer probably wrote his work?
Well, there was an oral tradition. Icelandic literature was extremely rich, and there was an oral tradition of poetry. But, yes, he would have written it. And there were many, many other aspects of Icelandic literature besides the sagas. There were the laws. There were various different forms of poetry.
There are the runes, the Eddas you mentioned.
Yes, a rune is not... A rune is an incised poem into a stone or something, mm-hmm. but the Eddas were poems. They were written out probably on vellum, which is a form of, originally, a form of leather, a form of calfskin. We don't have, let's say, Snorri's own manuscript, because they were then copied in subsequent years, so the sagas that we have are printed from our later copies. So we can't say for sure that Snorri took his instrument of writing and wrote it on the vellum. Maybe he dictated it. But there is a quality of sort of, how can I say this? As you read the sagas, each one, you sort of begin to infer the nature of the consciousness that is writing it.
Now, are these based on historical fact, or are
yes,
these total
invention? Yes, absolutely. The Icelanders were very interested in how Iceland came to be. They especially in this period, where the sagas are being written, And there are clearly many stories that went around in the different locales of Iceland about who was who, how they came here, what they brought with them, who they were related to. In every saga, there's a lengthy genealogy saying who was the first one who came to Iceland and who they married. So, and this is a sign that these were viewed as a form of historical document. And there were historical documents in Iceland, like the kings, the sagas of the kings and stuff like that. But what the authors of the Icelands, of the sagas of the Icelanders were interested in, apparently, was sociology and psychology and relationships, rather than the sequence of events that would, let's say, be a history.
But this is also during a time when Christianity is being spread. So we're going from a transition from the Norse gods like Odin and Thor before he became a Marvel comic book hero to Christianity. I guess it would be Catholicism at that time.
Well, yes. I mean, they were Christians who were writing the sagas, but they were quite familiar with the way that things worked before Christianity came to Iceland. Christianity came to Iceland just before the year 1000. Mm-hmm. And it came to Scandinavia, actually, just before the year 1000. And so in order to write about the historical period of the Vikings, they had to be aware of how the belief system among the Vikings is different from the belief system that they had.
And there's also a suggestion in the sagas that the Vikings came to the Americas before Columbus.
Oh, absolutely. I think that there are at least six or seven references to various activities of Scandinavians in Greenland, and then there are several other references to Scandinavians heading for Newfoundland, maybe the coast of Maine, and it's pretty evident now that they did come, that it wasn't just a fantasy, that they did come. They did stay for maybe a winter before they went back, but the Native American population could not be overcome with the weapons that the Icelanders had with them.
Now, Egil Skallagrimsson is pretty disfigured. He has a nasty temper. He is violent. When he's 7 years old, he kills another boy with an axe.
Yes.
Is he a hero or is he an anti-hero?
Well, this is a question that the sagas always ask, because they take as their main characters figures of power, and then they address these issues of what this power means. Now, Egil does not die like some of the saga characters. He lives into his 80s. He goes blind and deaf, and he starts being pushed around by the servant women in the household. As a young man, he simply can't, well, his grandfather and his father also simply cannot tolerate the idea of paying homage to the kings of Norway. And Egil always wants to use the law to get what he considers to be his rights. And so in always along with Egil's power fighting ability is his sense of what he thinks is appropriate. And so we have to see Egil's saga as being about what is the law, who personifies the law, what does it mean if the king goes out of his boundaries, what does it mean if a noble goes out of his boundaries, and how is the fighting going to be contained? And the fighting is hardly ever contained. I mean, the thing about a saga of 180 pages that covers a period of 150 years is the peaceful parts of that person's life are not explored. It seems more violent than maybe the life actually seems.
Although there's a lot of poetry here, and we have very little time, but he's a skaldic poet, although I'm not sure what skaldic poetry is.
Well, because of the nature of the Icelandic language, poems could be very intricate, sort of puzzle-like pieces that were written in memory of something or in honor of something or to give to someone as a benefit. And Egil happens to be good at that. So when you're reading Egil's saga, you get more of a sense of Egil's inner life because the poems are interpolated into the saga.
Now, we mentioned earlier that not many Americans read these sagas, although they're a lot of fun to read and actually in these wonderful translations are really function as pretty powerful literature. Are they read in Scandinavia?
Well, they're read in Iceland. You know, I think they're also read in Minnesota. You know, Icelandic literature is prominent among Scandinavians. In Iceland, which has a very high level of literacy, most people are quite familiar with the sagas and can quote parts of the sagas. I have found with my novel, The Greenlanders, that people from Minnesota, North Dakota, those parts of Canada that were settled by Scandinavians, they're familiar with the ways that the novel works, the ways that the people relate to one another, and the sort of bleakness of the action. So there is a Scandinavian tradition of literature in America that I think is wonderful. You know, Ole Rolvag, Giants in the Earth, The Immigrants, various other pieces of Scandinavian literature that we maybe read at a younger period.
I remember Kristen Lavransdatter was a big bestseller when I was a kid.
Oh, I'm happy to hear that. Yes,
Jane, I have to end it here. Alas.
I could go on. I'm sorry.
Well, we both could. This is just wonderful stuff. Jane Smiley wrote the preface to The Sagas of Icelanders, which is a huge paperback published by Penguin. We've been talking about one of the masterpieces included in it called Egil's Saga. And Jane, thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.